Hello, I'm Elizabeth, an obsessive backyard gardener who might be able to offer you a couple of tips.
And I'm Keith, a landscape consultant, and I'm also passionate about gardening.
The one thing we both have in common is
muddy boots.
It's early February 2024. What is happening in your garden at this time of the year? There's certainly not much happening in mine apart from the addition of loads of compost. I'm waiting until autumn to start planting my new garden, so it currently looks more like a desert than a garden. Keith's garden, on the other hand, is lush with flowers and foliage in his trial garden and an abundance of fruit and vegetables throughout his edible garden. He's going to tell us more about what's happening, what's going well, I hope, what he's planting and what issues, if any, this unusually humid weather in Melbourne has created. We're also going to have a chat about what jobs we should all be doing in the garden at this time of the year. So, Keith, what is currently blooming in your beautiful trial garden?
Well, there's quite a bit happening. And as I explained, it is a trial garden. So there's things in there now that are just starting to come into flower. There are plants that I've purchased from pretty reputable growers that just don't make the claims that they make.
For example?
Rudbeckias. There's some new lines of Rudbeckias that I'm using. And if you look at what height and width they're giving, they're about 80 centimetres height and width. Now, mine would be 1.4 metres tall with all foliage, no flowers, and the day hits 25 degrees and all the tips just fall over and wilt.
Oh. Well,
and it takes until the coolness of the evening before they actually stand back up again. So really, really disappointing with a couple of these new lines that I'm trialling out.
So why would it be that they're growing so tall?
There's no reason for that, because there's lots of other plants that I've moved that into the garden where I've remulched and recomposted, and they are not, displaying extra growth in those at all. So I don't know what it is,
right.
Whether or not they're – where they've trialled their plants, which is up in King Lake, so it's a cooler climate up there, they aren't as growing as high as they perhaps are doing down here in Mount Eliza. But that's something that's incredibly important for me because it's a design point.
Mm.
You know, we're looking, when we walk past, we're looking into foliage and no flowers.
And not
being able to see what's behind it.
Yeah, right.
You know, so the whole structure of the garden has fallen down just based on that particular thing. So there's some plants there there's one that has got a fabulous leaf shape, but once again, it's nearly one and a half metres tall.
Is that a Rudbeckia as
well? That's another Rudbeckia, another one I've never used before, with yellow flowers. It's got a beautiful leaf, but very late in the flowering. You know, it hasn't really even started to open up yet.
That wouldn't have anything to do with this weather, because it has been
because they flower when they're supposed to flower, whether it's a summer flowering perennial, a spring flowering perennial, or what, you know.
Aren't you finding, though, because of the weather, that some things are flowering which normally wouldn't? Because I'm seeing azaleas flowering. I'm seeing someone was telling me about their bulbs, their daffodils that had – they'd finished flowering, but then the leaves were dying, but there are new leaves coming up. And I'm just assuming that that's something to do with the weather. They're confused.
Yeah, look, it may be, but that may also be the bulb's opportunity to – replenish their storage energies in the bulbs themselves by putting more leaves on.
Okay.
They might not necessarily flower again.
Okay.
They might just put the leaves up again, get some more energy, store it in the bulb, have a bigger season next year.
Okay. Well, the next question was going to be, has anything not performed as well as you'd hoped? And we've obviously discussed the Rudbeckia, but everything else is going well. I mean, is the trial garden blooming with colour?
No.
Right.
No,
why not?
Well, because these plants are just so late in coming into fruition.
Okay.
But
you've got plenty of other things out there, though.
Yeah, there are. I mean, the agastaches look superb. The salvias always look wonderful.
Well, there you go.
But then, as I said, we're missing a lot of the plants that should be in full bloom, because they are in full bloom, but then in the wrong spot because you can't see them.
Oh,
you know, we've got things like Erigium, for instance, that is in beautiful flower, but they're being dwarfed by the other plants that, they're not supposed to be dwarfed by.
Get rid of those Rudbeckias.
So they're going, the Rudbeckias, I'm afraid.
Okay. Right. What fruits and vegetables are thriving right now? It's obviously a busy harvesting time, isn't it?
Yes, it is. We're into – the tomatoes have been very, very slow. So they're coming on very slowly. We've had to prune all the bottom leaves right up high on those, so we're letting sunlight get in. So they're just starting to come now. Yeah. They'll come in a rush. Yeah. That's the weather. We'll warm up.
Yep.
We planted three zucchinis, and we're feeding pigs with that at the moment. Pigs, yes, because we just can't consume what three zucchinis producing. I mean, some of them, you can actually go out there and just sit still, and the ground vibrates as they're growing. It's incredible. And then, of course, the other big grower has been cucumbers.
Yes.
They are just absolutely prolific. We've got three plants of those, and you go out every morning and bang, there's some more, you know. So,
and guess what Keith turned up with today? Some cucumbers. Lots and lots of cucumbers. We're very lucky. Thank you for that. Okay, so what about your trees? What about the fruit trees?
The fruit trees,
plums,
once again.
Peaches, apples, yeah. All of those things.
Okay, so the best peach tree that we've got is, of course, the donut peach. And with all this weather, we've created problems for ourselves with it. And one of the big problems is protecting the actual donut peaches from the rainbow lorikeets and the possums and everything else. Mm. We've had to net them. And, of course, the law now says that those nets must be 2 mil micron. And a 2 mil micron creates an environment inside inside the netting where the tree's all growing, where the fruit's all growing. It creates this extra humidity problem.
Mm.
You get lots of rain and then you're getting lots of problems with the humidity. So it's creating brown rot. And we've lost, I don't know, how many peaches this year with brown rot, nectarines, even the apricots. And the apricots have been problematic in terms of getting so much water at the stage that they're just starting to ripen, so that the tops of the apricots split. And then the bottoms, of course, because they're so wet, you get brown rot. So I've stripped all the trees off and I actually dried them, and the dried apricots are just absolutely stunning.
Okay, so you haven't been able to have them fresh, but you have been able to dry them.
We've been able to dry them, cool. and just
still
short circuit a bit of that problematic things with the.
So everyone has to have a net. What is your dryer? What sort of dryer is it? Because that's
I had a lass ask me today. Now we supported Fowlers for Cola for years. I've got a preserving unit, and I've got still a dehydrator because we burnt the first one out.
Right.
You know, because
you use it so much.
Yeah, just well that and the fact that it's doing a lot of work.
Yeah.
So we dry a lot of other things as well, not just fruit. We dry chicken to feed the dogs in the neighbourhood. As you go around, I'm known as the chicken man. We went and bought another drying unit, which is made in New Zealand, designed and made in New Zealand. It's called Easy Dry, Ezidry.
Yeah.
My wife thought it was French or something. She said it was an Ezidry.
Clever Leslie.
She's a clever Leslie.
From New Zealand.
The beauty about this little unit is that it's got a temperature gauge on the front rather than just a dial that you dial it to.
Mm.
So you can set your temperature gauge up. And then you've also got another gauge there that you can determine how many hours you want that unit on for. It's, for instance, a dry apricots. It might take, 18 hours at 35, 40 degrees Celsius to dry the fruit properly.
Mm.
Whereas, we're drying chicken breast, nicely thin sliced with a bit of salt on it, that takes about 11 hours.
Gosh.
So this is a fabulous unit, the Easy Dry or Zidri.
It sounds like the Zidri is on all the time, pretty much.
It's on a lot. It is on an awful lot.
Yep. Okay. For anyone following the moon calendar, which we hope a lot of our listeners are, it is a dormant period right now.
Mm-hmm.
So you won't be planting anything at the moment. But after the 12th of this month, what late summer autumn veggies are you going to plant?
Well, we're going to be doing things like lettuce. We're going to do another succession of lettuce. We're going to do some root crops. We're going to put some beetroot in. We're going to put some carrots in. We're going to be harvesting potatoes. So where the potatoes have come out, that's where we'll be putting, say, carrots and beetroot in.
Mm-hmm.
So the soil's there because they love those sorts of conditions that the potatoes have left them.
Yes, yeah.
It's this month, for instance, February is the time that if you're going to be growing Brussels sprouts, they have to go in this month.
Mm-hmm.
You can't grow them from seed from now on. It's got to be a seedling going into the ground for Brussels sprouts.
Okay.
So if you haven't got seedlings up and growing, then
it's too late.
Go and buy some. Yeah, go and buy some seedlings.
Yep.
There's lots of places that you can buy them where they actually post the seedlings out.
Mm-hmm.
There's a company over in Werribee that we bought seedlings off last year. This year we've got our own seeds growing early enough. We grew them last month, so they're coming on nicely.
Who is that company?
I don't remember. I just forget.
Give us the – well, we'll put it in the notes.
We'll see if we can find the notes.
Yes, yes, don't forget. Okay. Now, it's generally not a great time of year in general to plant anything new due to the heat and drier time of the year, even though we've had all this rain. Mm-hmm. Apart from those vegetables, is there anything else that you're doing? What else are you doing? What actively are you doing in the garden?
Well, there's still fruit that's going to be coming off the fruit trees, for instance, and this is a great time then to be pruning up a lot of those plants. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the European plums, for instance, will be just coming into fruition. And you like that word, fruition?
Very clever, yeah. Sorry, missed it.
To be harvesting those, and therefore you can tidy up the tree, clean up the trees while you're doing that as well. Mm-hmm. And the same with the likes of your peaches, your nectarines. If you've still got nectarines on, peaches should be finished by then, but if you've still got nectarines on, then what you should be doing is after you pick them, cut back to the last fruit, where the last fruit was, remove the branches to that, and that will then grow new branches that will have next year's flowers and next year's fruit on. So it's a good time to be looking at things like pruning up your fruit trees.
Okay. And with this humidity, I think some of our listeners might be dealing with a couple of diseases.
Yeah.
What is your solution for some of these things I'm about to mention? Black spot.
Once again, there's some really, really good rose sprays, for instance, that work beautifully for that.
Organic?
Look, there are some organic ones you can use. I would prefer to be treating the soil and looking after the soil to eliminate those problems in the first place.
Obviously.
So get your organic matter up into the soil. Great time to be getting broad forks out around where all your plants are too, and pushing the broad forks down and let some deep penetration of the moisture we have around get down deep and get the goodness down to the soil as well.
Obviously, well, that's looking after the soil is something we should be doing on an ongoing basis.
Yeah.
But if something like black spot comes up, we have to obviously, it's frustrating.
That's
why I don't have roses anymore, really, because my soil obviously wasn't good at the other house because I got it occasionally, the black spot.
One of the great organic treatments is actually to use full cream milk and just dilute it 50-50 with water.
And spray.
But what you've got to do is you've got to wait until you've got a day that you know you've got sunlight.
Yeah,
because it actually makes a very, very weak antiseptic, and the antiseptic will kill those fungal spores that are on the actual rose themselves. And it's just a matter of spraying it on. So a 50-50 mix of full cream milk and water.
Yes.
And spray it on a nice sunny day, and that will generally knock those fungal spores right off.
Okay.
And then you can use copper sprays. You can spray copper sprays. But if you're going to use copper spray, spray the plant, but also spray the ground as well.
Okay.
The co-sides and, there's lots of good copper sprays that will eliminate that problem as well.
What about blossom end rot, which we
blossom
all know
Blossom end rot? Well, if you've got blossom end rot, it's going to be on your tomatoes or some fruit.
Yeah.
And that really is showing that you've missed the boat, because there's not much you can do about blossom end rot. It's already happened. And what you need to do is prepare yourself for next year, and by doing that you need to check your soil pH, because blossom end rot only occurs with acidic soils. So get some calcium. I always use dolomite lime, and just go through and give it a real good dose of dolomite lime into the soil, and then put your tomatoes or your eggplants or, those sorts of plants that are affected by the blossom end rot, give them a good dose of dolomite lime.
While they're in?
No, before you actually plant them.
Yeah, before. And then leave that to sit for a little while and then plant.
Even if you put the seedlings in and then you give a dose of dolomite lime, that will still be effective. When the fruits start to actually occur that you get this problem.
All right. I've also got powdery mildew here.
Yeah, powdery mildew is another one of these problems.
Look after your soil.
It's your soil. It gets back to your soil. Yeah, it does. We had a question about this a little while ago, and it was actually powdery mildew on citrus.
Oh, yes, we did.
Yeah.
We did.
It's just a matter of just maintaining your soil's active, and also your plant's growth rates. It's going to burn those things out if you really get out there and give it a good dose of fertiliser and just cut back the competition, for instance, with grasses and stuff like that and well mulched.
One more, unless you've got more that you can think of. Rust.
Rust is a real problem, and the best way to eliminate rust, because you're going to have rust when you see it, not beforehand.
Okay, you're not all right. Be so
you're going to have all these little red pustules on your plants, and one of the worst plants that actually hits is and it hit me again this year was actually garlic.
Oh, really?
Really bad with garlic, and what you can do with rust is rather than spraying a fungicide, because there's not organic fungicides that are really effective with it, it's a matter of burning that rust out by growth. And what you do is you give your plants a real good feed of a high nitrogenous fertilizer, and that will then tend to burn that out.
Okay, well, that's good to know. Okay, all right, well, should we move on? Can you think of any other diseases you can think of that we need to cover for this, especially with this humidity that we're dealing with?
Everything's just a pain. So organic sprays are probably the best things you can do. You can use a copper base or a Bordeaux spray. Okay. Bordeaux sprays, I think, are probably a better solution for, you know, the likes of the blights and so forth, because it tends to hang on to the plant a lot more than the copper spray does. Mm-hmm. Bordeaux is a really old-fashioned spray. They used to make it up themselves using lime and all sorts of stuff. But you can be much easier to go and buy it and spray it, yeah.
From the big green warehouse.
Yep.
Okay, how are you coping with the possums, the birds, the insects, all of those little critters?
Oh, look, insects are always a real problem. And I've noticed in my backyard now, on the weatherboards of the house, in the mornings I'm seeing the little stinking rotten passion fruit leafhopper, which is little like a little triangular thing with clear, well, almost a clear wing, a little bit of brown in their wings. And they are absolute mongrels, because they will suck the sap out of just about anything. So what I've done this year, sorry.
Where do they come from? What's bringing them into the garden?
Oh, it's just timing. This is just just part of their life cycle.
So it's called the passion
fruit leaf hopper.
So it is. You don't have to have it passion fruit in the garden, or
No. But that's the thing where most people see them is on passion fruit vines.
Okay.
I did a post, you know, a little while ago on passion fruit, and showed that there's no possums have touched my passion fruit.
That's right.
And there's no leaf hoppers on mine, either the little passion fruit leaf hopper or another one that is around, prevalent. It's sometimes very hard to see because it's quite small, and that's a thing called a springtail.
Yeah, I haven't heard of that.
And it's got a little white thing on its butt, and you go near it and it just goes, it just jumps off.
That's not an aphid.
No, it's not an aphid. It's just called a springtail.
Oh, maybe that's, yeah.
So that's also a sap-sucking problem. So I have a spray bottle in the shed fully mixed up all the time with Eco Oil and Eco Neem.
Okay.
And I've sprayed the passion fruit vines, I've sprayed all my vegetables and everything else with the Eco Oil and Eco Neem until it's running off, and there's not been one little leaf hopper on that. They're on the weatherboards sucking the paint out rather than sucking the sap out of the plants that they normally would.
Perfect.
And I've had a couple of people contact me and say, you know, they've purchased Eco Neem and they've read the instructions and it says that they're not certified for use on vegetables.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So I actually rang a chap that has worked for OCP, which is Organic Crop Protectants. I've known him for many, many years, Stephen, and I said to him, you know, what's the story with it? I thought you were going to be putting money in to get it certified, certification for use on crops here in Australia. Mm. And he said, the company's now owned by Yates, and he said they have thrown hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars at trying to get the certification through for the trials. And he said, and in the end, they're throwing their hands up in the air. So he said that Eco Neem is used and approved in New Zealand, and it has a fallow period of 1 day. And what that means is that if you spray it, you shouldn't be eating anything on it for a day.
Okay.
And he said, but there's other countries around the world that there's no withholding period whatsoever.
Okay.
So if you're worried about Eco Neem here in Australia, go and buy it from New Zealand. At least you only have to wait a day. But it's the same product.
Exactly the same product.
Exactly the same product.
But to be safe, wait a day.
wait a day. That's okay. Well, that's what the, you know, the New Zealanders, but all the other countries said no.
Don't worry about it.
You know, I mean, it's one of the most revered plants in India. It's just a wonderful
plant. Yeah, exactly. All right, we've talked about deadheading in a recent podcast. Now is a good time to be pruning and deadheading flowering perennials of any spent flowers, because it'll encourage a second flush of blooms to start with. Through the end of summer and into autumn, and then it also prevents them from going into seed.
Exactly.
So things like agapanthus, dahlias, roses, geraniums, all that sort of thing. Yep. So that's what we should be promoting at the moment, isn't it? It's a good time to do all that.
Absolutely. And if you've got perennials, for instance, and they're starting to look a bit tired, a good clip round with a pair of shears or hedging tools or whatever else will then give that plant the opportunity to put another blush on. You know, so you'll get late flowering, right into just about the end of August, September.
Extend that flowering period
because that's looks
what
fabulous.
That's what we want exactly. Yeah. It's also, as you've touched on, it's also a very good time to do any work on the soil that needs to be done. You mentioned the broadfork, so aerating, composting, fertilising. What sort of things are you doing with the soil?
Well, I've been loving my broadfork. I mean, my lawn here in February is just lush and dark green. It just looks absolutely superb. You know, so I go in with the broadfork and in the garden beds, I'll push it down and, you know, get the air down and the water down. And it's been great because we've had so much rain.
Yeah.
You know, the soil.
So you can actually get it in there.
You've got a water table now, which you wouldn't normally have. Yep. And, of course, with the rains... I've got a tank around the side, but it's only 2,100 litres, and that would generally last me about a week and a bit, having it come on every day on the vegetables.
Right.
Yeah. But with all the rain we've had, it's been continually full, which has just been an absolute bonus. So there's a saving.
Yeah, that's fantastic. It's not the summer that we thought we were going to have.
No,
we were expecting it to be dry, and it's been the extreme opposite, which has been fantastic, I guess. Not for everybody.
No.
Been a bit of flooding, which has not been good. Okay, so if we've covered all of those things, our garden should be in top shape and ready for planting of anything new or for any changes we'd like to make once the cooler season arrives. Mm-hmm. Thanks for that snapshot of your beautiful garden, Keith. Is there anything we've missed?
Well, one of the most exciting things for us this year is that I've got fruit on both the avocado trees.
Oh,
masses of fruit.
Beautiful.
Yeah, which has just been superb. So the Huss has produced its first crop since we've had it, which is probably about 10 years old.
Yeah.
And it's in a shaded area, which doesn't help because we've got, you know, high bamboo growing over from the next door neighbours, which shade the tree a bit. But the Wurtz is absolutely covered in fruit, which is just fantastic. So
that is wonderful.
Leslie's looking forward to that, let me tell you. She loves her avos.
Yes, so do I. Hello, I'm here.
Hello.
I work with someone who's got, I think, a holiday house in Rosebud and has a very old avocado tree, and he says there are hundreds of avocados on that
tree. It's been a beautiful season for them because they're a subtropical plant. They just love this weather.
Fantastic. Thank you so much.
It's a pleasure.
Happy gardening, everyone. Thank you for listening to Muddy Boots. For more information on today's podcast, please go to muddyboots.net.au. And happy gardening.